And boom goes the dynamite.
Get your towels ready, it's about to go down. Everybody in the place, hit the open deck. But stay on your motherfucking toes. We running this, let's go.
I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat. I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the motherfucking boat. I'm on a boat, motherfucker. Oh, take a look at me, straight floating on a boat.
Good evening and welcome to episode 16 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite review show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me today is Chris. Chris, how you doing, brother?
Hey, good. In much better spirits than 2 weeks ago when we convened together for this. So, thankfully, you and Lawrence held down the fort last week around for what seemed to be a much better episode, and then we had this one, which, in an interesting turn of events, we are on the boat. Well, not us, the entire All Elite Wrestling staff is on a boat. We're at home.
Yeah, as I'm sure you heard from the theme music this week. But first, did you see Dark?
No, I didn't get a chance to catch it.
Okay. Well, I'll quickly go through it because it was only a half-hour episode.
Okay.
But, you know, hosted by Tony Schiavone and Dasha Gonzalez. These were taped at Coral Gables last week with Excalibur and Taz on commentary. The first match, Big Swole versus the debuting Diamante. And, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. There was a pretty needless spot with Chanclas. You know, pretty needless spanking spot. But besides that, it was a decent match. I didn't mind it so much. The second match, there was only two matches on this edition of Dynamite, in which Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, pinning El Lindemann of Strong Hearts, Shima, T-Hawk, and El Lindemann. That was a very fun match.
That I do need to go out of my way to seeing it, because I saw some of the highlights through Twitter land yesterday, but just between work and all else that I needed to get caught up on, I didn't get quite the chance to watch Dark earlier today on my lunch break like I was intending to do, because I did see it was the 30-minute episode. Though it is interesting that they also released a bonus match as well earlier today between Joey Janela and Phoenix, apparently.
Yeah, and I
said to be good.
Yeah, and I completely missed it. So I have nothing to say about that. Apparently, Janela won that match because they spoiled the result of it on Dynamite tonight. Yeah. But anyway, on that note, let's move on to episode 16 of AEW Dynamite live. On a boat from the Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2 on the Norwegian Pearl, part of the Norwegian Cruise Lines brand. I guess somewhere in Nassau, near Nassau in the Bahamas?
Yes, they were near, I think, the port of Nassau, I believe, something like that.
Of course, your hosts, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur. Jim Ross not wearing that cowboy hat because apparently the winds at sea were wreaking havoc on his ability to wear a cowboy hat, as well as the smoke and pyro.
Yeah, you could tell from the get-go the wind was going to be a challenge to deal with, and it definitely showed itself quite a few times throughout the broadcast. But if we're talking about venues that AEW has done, alongside the Jacksonville one, which the Cons own, this sort of really small, intimate setting just kind of set the tone from the get-go for what kind of show we were going to get, and
oh yeah,
big fan of it, to say the least.
Yeah,
everybody was on board for this.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I said it reminded me a lot of the old WCW Monday Nitros that they did at Spring Break, and maybe even Road Wild a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, just that, you know, just the more intimate setting. Of course, you know, that will lead to something that, you know, always happened on those spring break nitros, and you know, the tradition continues. But we'll get to that later in the show. But first, our first match of the evening, the AEW World Tag Team Championships, in which SCU, Frankie Kazarian, Scorpio Sky, defend against the kind of makeshift team of Kenny Omega and Adam Page. SCU has held the titles for 84 long, arduous, boring days. How many defenses did they make? Is this like their third or fourth defense?
I believe it would be V3 or V4 that they're on off the top of my head. Yeah,
yeah. I didn't bother to go back and look at my notes from previous episodes. But anyway, yeah, Chris, tell me about the match.
For me in particular, I thought arguably it was probably one of the Kazarian-Scorpio duo's better matches in their reign in terms of working the way that they did against the challengers. I like the fact that they're emphasizing that Hangman and Omega are trying to work together for certain spots, and some things are working, such as the fireman's carry lift that Kenny does into the moonsault with Page following with the shooting star press before Kenny came down for the moonsault, kind of akin to like Golden Lovers-esque type of offense. But then you also have the miscommunications still happening. For example, the buckshot lariat that missed, I believe, Scorpio and got Kenny flush and caused a near fall in the process there. I definitely did like that, the aspect of, you know, they're not a tag team, but they're accomplished single stars trying to do the most that they can with the circumstances, and that the way that they won it too is that eventually it was a situation where Paige kind of made it like an impromptu singles match by taking out, what was it, Scorpio on the outside, and then yeah. Buckshot Larry at Kazarian for the pinfall. So,
yeah, you know, there's a couple of criticisms I do have. I mean, it was a decent match, and it's a historic one too, because I'll get into that here momentarily. But I thought that they, number one, you know, again, we criticize WWE and they criticize WWE, and they keep saying that they want to be an alternative to WWE, but they also say they want to focus on tag teams, and then we get the WWE trope of two singles guys working together, maybe even don't really like each other, and then, you know, of course they're going to win the titles, you know. And the other thing is that I thought that the match kind of went on too long. Like, guys, this isn't Misawa Kobashi against the Holy Demon Army, you know? We didn't need for this to go on that long. But all that being said, it is an historic event, because this is the first ever title change in the history of All Elite Wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Indeed it is.
So mark that down. This is the first ever title change, and the reign of terror of the super push of Scorpio Sky is now officially over, I think.
We'll wait and see where that goes at this point. But to be said, as you mentioned, the WWE trope of unlikely partners becoming champions thing, something that we've seen before across multiple mediums. But given the fact that I think for maybe a lot of the, specifically like the Elite fans, feeling that Kenny and Hangman have sort of been just, you know, overshadowed to an extent out of the executive VPs, like Elite guys, this does give them something to sink their teeth into finally. That's story related. How it sort of feeds into Kenny's whole thing with Pac, and when that finishes, I don't know how they're going to play that out, but I figure that has to have some sort of ending there as well.
Yeah, and it seems like they just kind of forgot about that whole thing.
You do think so, but I mean, we can touch back on that a little bit later, since there is something to address involving the new champs there as well. But consider me mildly optimistic, depending on how they book the next few weeks of the two of them. as champions. It's a really, to me, it's a wait and see approach. So hopefully it delivers. So yeah. There's that.
And speaking of Reign of Terrors, we still have the Reign of Terror of Britt Baker appearing on our TV with the second match, which it was Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, which, by the way, it has been pointed out to me that that is actually a redundancy.
Doctor Medical Dentistry or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, putting doctor and DMD is a redundancy. Going up against Priscilla Kelly, and I spent most of the match trying to figure out which Street Fighter character Priscilla Kelly looked like, because I could not remember the character's name.
Probably Jury? Not Jury. It's on the tip of my tongue.
I actually was given the correct answer. I asked my daughter. She said Sea Viper, but I looked at
the Sea Viper thing. Yeah, I can see it. Yep, I can see it now, sure.
But no, that was not the correct answer. The correct answer is Poison.
My goodness. So we're talking Final Fight on top of that, because that was.
Is she a Final Fight character?
Yep, Final Fight originally, and then she got introduced into Fighter series eventually with Guy and Cody eventually. Okay. Or she was after Guy and Cody got introduced into it, so yeah.
Gotcha. So, okay, I did not know that.
Alchemist, guys, to say the least. you get all sorts of random tidbits here. Boom goes the dynamite. But good for Priscilla Kelly getting a singles match. I think she's cool. She's got a really good look to her, and she did okay with what she was given. It's just that at this point, we're here. The two of us have made ourselves quite clear on how Bed Bath & Beyond done we are with Dr. Britt Baker. And it just got doubled down considerably on this episode, as she did eventually pick up the win with Lockjaw and then proceeded to, you know, for some reason, shit on Tony Schiavone, which is just, that's not cool, man.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because just immediately before that promo, they had the shot of Britt going up on the top turnbuckle to celebrate, and her eyes looked glazed over, as far as I could tell. And then she cut this awful rambling promo that they even cut away from on camera. It's like, okay, we're done here. I think they actually did cut away on that was an audible call to cut away.
Fair enough.
My God, that was.
I get the idea that they're going for with her basically trying to play herself as the sort of paragon of virtue at this point with the doctorate and stuff like that, and it's a good audible to call considering that I don't think she's resonated with the audiences as much as the VPs probably were hoping that she would for the women's division.
What I'm thinking of the audible call was, I think someone in the control booth says, yeah, no, you got to get her off TV right now, because she was, she was just on something and rambling, you know? You know, like Lauren said that, you know, Janela looked like he was on three different painkillers last week with that promo, although Janela, that was a pre-taped one, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this was pre-taped too, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, there's a difference between stuff that's happening on the show and then stuff that was outright pre-taped before the show, regardless of whether that show was taping or not. But again, I just must point out the other bit of injustice here, where yet another person is just saying shit on live TV, and Chuck Taylor has not gotten this chance to say it.
Right. Now,
let Dustin go on TV and say it.
Now, somebody mentioned, Chris Zellner on Twitter mentioned there were a lot of bleeps on the TNT broadcast. I was like, I didn't hear a one tonight.
Nope, they definitely did it for a lot of the chance, especially in the main event portion of things.
I didn't hear the audio cut out during the main event.
Yes, that's what it was.
And
I'll explain the basis of that once we get to the main event, because there is background to that.
Okay.
But that said, yeah, it was just one of those situations where, I guess we're getting a heel Britt Baker now, which, again, not sure that's necessarily a good thing, considering that outside of, you know, Chris Statlander, Hikaru Shida, Nyla Rose, and Shanna, the women's division has either been booked inconsistently or just been a dumpster fire so far into
which sucks, to say the least. Yeah, it's considering last week, like I said, Nyla Rose against Shanna was like the best thing I've seen on AEW TV in weeks. And of course, you know, we got nothing today. Unless there's someone coming on Dark, you know, next week. The third match, this was good. The Inner Circle, Chris Jericho, Santana, and Ortiz up against Jurassic Express. I thought this was a great, fun TV match. Lots of spots. Jericho puts people over like nobody else in this company. Even when Jericho's winning, he puts people so over in this company.
Yeah, 100%. Just a great showcase for the Jurassic Express once again. You can definitely tell that they do think the world out of Luchasaurus, given that they're definitely still keeping him held at bay for something big to let him just really go full all out. But what we do see is just super fun to watch. He works really well with Jungle Boy and with Marco Stunt. Just three very talented guys that should hopefully go very far in the company over the next coming years. Just again, the other big thing is, and I figure Santana and Ortiz at this point are just being held towards eventually. I think this is like your next AEW Tag Team Champions when that title change is finally ready to happen once the Hangman Omega thing runs its course. But yeah, again, like you said with Jericho, just all of your points resonate with me as well, big time on that.
Yeah, and as far as Luchasaurus goes, he has a move called Shining Lizard, so he's already a candidate for my Wrestler of the Decade, just based on that alone.
Phenomenal name. Like, whoever thought of that specifically, just chef kiss.
Oh, yes. But, I mean, I have mentioned before that Jurassic Express were actually one of the things that actually sold me on AEW. That and, you know, the Lucha Bros, you know?
For sure.
Because it wasn't the Elite that sold me on All Elite Wrestling. It was a lot of the ancillary people that sold me on it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's great that you know, Jurassic Express as a whole are getting, you know, these rubs from Jericho. And, you know, you could tell Jericho's actually enjoying this little feud with Jungle Boy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This little occasional feud that they have.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, for sure, it's just Jericho's best work over the past couple of years has really been working with some of these younger guys that may not be as well-known or on the card, or who aren't as well-known to a worldwide audience. Let's, I guess, be more specific, because that can also include even dating back to 2017, the stuff with Kenny Omega that, you know, kind of started another career renaissance for him to a certain extent. Yeah, right. Another, like, metamorphosis, basically.
Yeah, right. Well,
what we see now.
Right. Well, and we've talked at length about that on the special podcast, Days of Thunder, Pick Your Poison with Chris Jericho, with our friends Dave Ryan and Stagger Lee Malone here on this very feed. So, moving on. Yeah, anyway, great match, fun match. I enjoyed it. Next match, not so much. MJF against Joey Janela. Didn't we see this like 50 million times in Combat Zone in the New Jersey Indies?
I mean, more than likely, I would have said Beyond first and foremost.
Oh,
on
you know
what?
That's a good point. I forgot about Beyond, but yeah, Combat Zone was the first one that came to mind for me.
Fair enough. Hey, it's still within that general tri-state area portion of things. And to be fair, the match itself was okay.
Tell me. You got to say tri-state area like Doofenshmirtz on Phineas and Ferb, though.
My God. I don't think I'd be able to pull off that impression, but
for
those who can and are willing to do that bit, you can tweet us a strong style story or Brazilian Fury with that. We'll include it as a little, you know, input clip somewhere in the next episode.
As I tried to conquer the tri-state area. Yeah.
My God.
Yes, I had kids. Shut up. Anyway.
No, this is fine.
Anyway, the match was kind of eh, and, you know, the cornrows, yeah, that wasn't working. I'm sorry, Joey. The cornrows were not working. Neither is this whole fucking Penelope Ford Kip Sabian angle. Like,
yeah,
who gives a shit, honestly? Do you? Because I don't.
I think most people are just like, all right, then, moving on.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, great, yeah. So, of course, we did mention, of course, that these shows, you know, this show has had the feel of a, you know, of the old spring break WCW Monday Nitros, which, of course, always inevitably ended with somebody going into the water. Well, guess what? So, what do you take it from here, Chris?
Well, I mean, we did have to sit for like 5 minutes of specifically MJF cutting the exact same promo, almost word by word, for the third week in a row, which just...
You know, I will give credit. The line about, yes, this is another chapter in your book, the final one. I was like, you know what, that's actually a nice turnaround, you know?
That's one good line from the scarf and whatever piece of human meat the scarf itself occupies at this point. Yeah. So,
but anyway, continue.
Just ideally, then Cody, of course, comes out, points out that the entire crowd is chanting asshole at him because, well...
They were.
They're not wrong. Yeah. It's like they were, and they're not wrong. And then, of course, the reminder of, you can't touch me, neener, neener, neener. Unfortunately, it seems that MJF, in his, you know, deliriousness, probably something to do with being at sea, I guess he forgot the fact that there's four executive VPs, and two of them are more than willing to kick him upside the head. In comes the Young Bucks.
Yeah. And
a double super kick happens, and then... just again, I'm glad we didn't bet actual money on this because I would have lost $10 at least. Because as it turns out, it is none other than Maxwell Jacob Friedman who gets tossed into the pool by the Young Bucks moments later. My money was on Drunk Hangman crowd surfing into the pool after the opener. For those who are curious,
yeah. So that was fun. That was, yeah, we did get our pool segment. I mean, how do you hate a pool segment?
You have to be kind of soulless to a certain extent. But
anyway, following that, we get a segment with an interview with the new World Tag Team Champions, Kenny Omega, Adam Page. Page, of course, has a drink in hand.
Yep.
But, it's just... Yeah, that, and then the Young Bucks show up. I really hope that they brought their whole family with them on this week-long trip. You know, because, you know, they have families, don't you know?
I mean, true, but then again, at the same time, would any sane parents submit their own children to a cruise at sea with a bunch of wrestling fans on it?
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? I don't think I would submit my family to a cruise at sea, first of all. Like, maybe, like a ferry ride? Okay, sure. But a cruise? Hell no.
You're just like, no.
No, I would rather just go to a beach, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's fair.
Anyway. Yeah, cruise ships, I don't know, man. I'm not of that mindset, you know? We're going to take a cruise down to Jamaica. Okay, I'm going to take an airplane down to Jamaica and then be in Jamaica, you know?
Yeah, it's like be in Jamaica, right? Cool. That's fantastic. Anyways, the point that they drove here was that, A, you know, Hangman kind of reminding that he sort of kicked the crap out of Kazarian and Sky by himself there at the end, which he's right, he did. And then kind of throwing shade at Matt and Nick for saying, wow, we actually won these before you guys did, which was just... Talk about a parting shot before leaving and then leaving everybody else confused in the process. Should be noted, though, as an initial note there, that Pac did get mentioned in the interviewing process, and that Kenny said at some point or another that the rubber match would happen, but that right now his focus was on the tag team titles, which, hey, cool.
Yeah, well, you know, because let's face it, I think we were all, right now, we were all much more excited about, you know, Billy the Fish going up against Jon Moxley, which, hey, guess what? That's our final match of the night.
Uh-huh.
And, this is, of course, the number one contenders match for the AEW World Heavyweight title. And, yeah, this was stellar. I love this match.
Yeah, very fun. Again, Pac proving why he's been one of the best in the world for a few years now since leaving the abhorrous hell that was New York. A lot of people I don't think may have...
I thought you were going to say Dragon Gate for a second. I was getting worried.
No. Actually, my next point was going to be the fact that I don't think a lot of people took attention to what he did in Dragon Gate, which is beyond impressive, what he managed to do during the year and a half, 2 years that he had there since, you know, coming back from...
Yeah, it was. It was a very impressive run. But, I mean, of course, you know, let's face it, Mox has had his own impressive run since then.
Definitely so.
But, of course, he wrestled the match. He's selling this eye injury. Even kind of juiced a little bit, if you noticed. They closed up on him. Because you could take the boy out of death matches, but... I guess you can't take the death matches out of the boy, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and, yeah, God, that was just... I'm kind of stammering here. It's just, this was just a great match. It was, just watch it. It was, you know, for a TV match. And remember the last time that they wrestled, remember that they went to a TV time limit. It was a time limit draw.
Yes, it was. And it even got... noted in Pac's graphic walking out of the match that out of Jon Moxley's matches, that was the only one in which Moxley didn't get like a pinfall or submission so far into it, like out of the singles. So,
but yeah, that was it was great. I mean, they brawled all over the crowd. You know, they went up to the upper level. I'm surprised they didn't try to do a spot from the upper level. They probably weren't allowed to.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm almost surprised nobody tried to, you know, do a jump off the boat spot. But then again, that's like lethal.
That's death, basically.
Yeah, that's instant death. Because either you hit the water or them rotors is going to chop you up.
Pretty much. And I think even Jericho made that point to somebody on Twitter when they asked about somebody getting tossed overboard. He's just like, no, you die, you idiot.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, because if the force of you hitting the water doesn't kill you, then you're going to be chopped up into little pieces.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Jon Moxley, Death Rider. Actually, it looked like he hit several of them. I mean, they kept calling them just DDTs. Those look like Death Riders. Maybe just, you know, doesn't have the elevation, but he's doing the double. Yeah. Definitely doing the double arm.
Yeah, definitely so. Though I did like the fact that they kind of showcased the first two as more like desperation counters than anything with the one eye and stuff like that. And they played to that portion of the story really well with Pac viciously going after the eye, the Kawada kicks, which got referenced on commentary.
I heard that. That was I was like, wait, what? But and of course, you know, let's face it, if he's going to wrestle in AEW with one eye, you know what? This is just part of an intense training regimen to go up against Minoru Suzuki coming up on February the 9th.
For sure.
But hey, guess what? I will be in attendance for a Chris Jericho versus Jon Moxley title match, Chris.
Yeah, there you go. It's been made official for Revolution now.
Yes, it has. So I am psyched about that. Hey, on that note, sorry to sidetrack, are you going to the March 4th show?
Ideally, yes. Just basically waiting to pay some bills during the course of February, and I should have enough left over on my Spectrum to secure those tickets probably that first weekend of February, and just try to get a decent enough seat to go and witness it for myself. Be on assignment for a week. Why not?
Yeah, because you have said that, you know, nobody ever comes to Denver, or the Denver area, we should say.
Yeah, definitely so. So I'm really interested actually to see how they draw out here. Not only just here, but also in Salt Lake as well the following week. Because if there is a market here and people are willing to go to it, then yeah, I mean, that's another foothold for AEW to come in every couple of months. Because WWE only shows up once every like 16 to 18 months kind of thing. And most of the time it's just their house show tours. So...
Now, didn't you say something to the effect, you told me something to the effect of...
It is in Broomfield, which is basically about 25 to 30 minutes northwest of downtown Denver itself. So you're looking at the first bank center, which is where... I'm trying to think which like minor league team plays there off the top of my head. I don't think it's hockey, but... But no, but they basically have a really nice arena over in that particular area there, but it is northeastern Colorado that you're looking at this point.
Right. So anyway, the point was is that now you feel me about the whole Hoffman Estates thing.
Yes, 100%.
So
you never quite get it until it actually is like right in your face and you know the neighborhoods per se. Because to me in particular, like, had they run, like, say, Denver Coliseum, yeah, you're right in downtown Denver at that point.
Right. I mean, Revolution will be happening in the city. I mean, it's going to be, you know, blocks from Soldier Field and McCormick Place. So, well, actually, I'm a little bit more than blocks from Soldier Field, but you get my point. Yeah, on that note, there may be no show or a late show that week of March the 4th because I will not be watching Dynamite live because I will be going to finally never been able to finally seeing one of my all-time favorite bands, that being Wire.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I will be attending that show. But anyway, let's drag this back on topic. We have our main event now set for Revolution, and it will be Le Champion Chris Jericho going up against Jon Moxley. Likelihood of a title change happening?
I think that would be one of the better spots to do it on. I'm not 100% sure if they want to pull the trigger on Moxley that quickly, or whether it's a situation where they might want Jericho to hold it for a little bit longer, just to kind of give it the extra credibility. I do think, however, that whatever happens in Revolution probably still might not be the end of whatever Jericho Moxley have as a rival. It could be kind of like the prelude to a final step thing. I just don't know yet. But if they decide to pull the title change, that would be a really good place to do it on. It'd be in front of a hot crowd, and it'd be giving the most over guy in the company the belt on top of it. So
wait. Orange Cassidy's not in this match, though.
I still would maintain Moxley as the most over man, and Cassidy is like a 1B to his 1A.
Yeah,
how's that?
Gotcha. Yeah, on that note, no Orange Cassidy tonight. What's up with that?
I'm kind of curious to see if they have him in the AEW Dark portion of the lineup here, or what may be going on in that regard. But yeah, interesting. But then again, like with stuff like that going overseas and passwords being required, who knows, some of the guys could possibly be like where that situation may have not worked.
And
I don't know.
Right. And furthermore, I don't know. You told me that Phoenix apparently was working hurt, so no Penta and Phoenix tonight.
Yeah, apparently something with his neck happened during the Janelle match is what I read, but then quote me 100% on that. Just hoping it's nothing like too dire kind of thing.
Yeah, speaking of which, right before we recorded, my honey sent me this wonderful photo. I don't actually know how old it is, but it is a photo of Pentagon holding a bunch of belts, because I see a AAA and a Lucha Underground, the Lucha Underground title.
Uh-huh.
But he's wearing a 49ers jersey, and he has a special number 85, 49 colors version of his mask.
Nice. It could be from when he met, who was it, Travis Kelce, I think is what it is?
Possibly.
Or, then again, he might be on the Chiefs, sorry. I'm just trying to remember who's the big super Penta fan that's a part of the 49ers.
Oh, really?
Off the top of my head. Yeah, no.
Well, he's wearing number 85, so.
George Kittle, that's his name. Yeah.
And he's
he's a huge Pentagon fan, basically, because he's done the Cero Miedo taunt, like, as a touchdown celebration before.
Oh my goodness, are you serious?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Oh my god, you know what, I just looked up George Kittle Pentagon hoodie, and wow.
He has actual custom Cero Miedo cleats on top of it too, so.
Okay, I think now I totally want the 49ers to win on Super Bowl Sunday now that I know.
That's fair. That is fair.
George Kittle's going to be a massive Pentagon fan. But anyway, do we need to do a pros and cons? Because, I'm willing to do it. You want to do pros and cons? Pros and cons. Let's do it.
Sure.
Do it.
For me in particular, the only cons that I'm going to point out are Britt Baker's promo portion of the post-match, as well as MJF's, ironically enough, the two big sort of promo segments we had in ring were the not so good portions of this show. Outside of that, I thought the main event was pretty great. The six man between Inner Circle and Jurassic Express was phenomenal as well. And just Hangman being Hangman to me was the highlight of the show as well too. Just I know a couple of people are like, oh god, they're just doing the Scott Hall thing with him again from way back in the Nitro days, but
yeah,
I think Hangman is charismatic enough to like work with it and make it his own, and so far into it, like, it's provided some like fantastic facial expressions, so
yeah. But you know, I gotta agree with Lawrence though, it really is a tasteless angle.
Yeah, unfortunately, really, that's the drawback of it, in the fact that it deals with addiction, and that's a real thing that people go through, and it's...
Yeah,
It's Hangman making the most out of it, but it is very problematic, on the other hand.
To say the least. Yeah, I'm gonna be positive. I'm gonna be a little posy. The intimate setting, I really enjoyed that. You know, you never told me about the bleeping.
Oh, what happened during that is that apparently another boat was passing by theirs during the main event, so they were literally chanting, "That boat sucks," and "fuck that boat" at the other boat.
Oh my god. Yeah, I heard something about another... Yeah, Jericho said something about another boat.
Yes.
Oh god.
Yep, that's what it was.
Oh my goodness.
That's when they had to get bleeped.
Okay, that I can understand getting bleeped. But, like, all the shits and assholes, yeah, that wasn't getting bleeped.
I think, TNT has lenience on that. It's just the F word. If they can bleep it out because it's not live, then, they'll do it.
But, so my pros, of course, was, the very intimate setting of this cruise, even though I think cruise ships are fucking ridiculous, but it really worked for this event, I have to say. As much as we made fun of, you know, the last one, because that's where, you know, the Elite ended the Bullet Club feud by just saying, yeah, no, we quit Bullet Club. We're done. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway,
the low light of 2018, basically, yeah, everybody.
Which we're not going to relitigate again, because I really just don't want to relive that. I absolutely loved the main event. I absolutely loved Jurassic Express against the Inner Circle. I thought that match was great. So, yeah, definitely watch those two matches. The cons... Britt Baker, just in general, and again, I swear her eyes were glazed over, and that call to cut the promo, I think that was not planned. I think that was just, yeah, somebody in the production booth says, yeah, she's loaded and rambling, get her off the TV. So, I could be wrong. MJF, yeah, I'm just convinced that he has one shtick, and it's a scarf, and... it's never going to improve unless, you know, he has to do a radical character change for this to improve at this point, you know? And I just don't see it happening right now.
Yeah. So. And it's not going to happen because, unfortunately, being an edgy asshole to edgy assholes on wrestling Twitter is apparently something that has made him a decent amount of money to lead him to this point and signing with AEW. So, yeah, I don't see it stopping, which is going to be super annoying for the next couple of years.
You know, honestly, it's funny because I can almost take it on... I almost deal with it better on Twitter than I can on TV. You know? Maybe you don't know. I don't know. But
it's interesting.
It's like if for some reason, the shtick of him going after fans, you know, who say, you know, dumb shit to him... sometimes some of those fans are people I know, and they're not, it's not really dumb. He's just, you know, still being a heel, but, you know, quote unquote, mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know. Right now on TV, this is not working. And I mean, hopefully they wrap this up at Revolution at this point.
Fingers crossed.
So. So that's it. They and we by extension were on a boat, and next week they go to the tropical paradise of Cleveland. Their debut in Ohio. So and that's where we leave off for this week's episode of AEW Dynamite. Chris, plug yourself.
Plain and simple, just at Brazilian Fury over on Twitter and on Instagram.
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style. Also at GD Wessel. That's two S's, one L. You can also listen to my other show, Busting Balls, soundcloud.com/busting-balls. We just dropped a new episode this week in which my co-host and I, we go over what we feel were the top moments and stories of the previous decade. So it's not a best of, it's just the top stories. You know, a lot of it's positive, some of it not. But in fact, we discussed something that was kind of a little close to your home, Chris. Actually, two things are a little close to your home.
Oh, dear God.
Number one, Brazil 1, Germany 7.
Yep.
And then, of course, the...
Don't remind me.
And then, the other thing, much more serious, the Chapecoense disaster. We did discuss... those are actually... Yeah, those are two of our biggest moments. You know, that actually... The Brazil match, it was only one of two actual matches we discussed. Do you want to take a guess at the other one?
I just know that there's enough matches out there that could possibly be like its own topic of discussion. So by all means, what was it?
Manchester City versus Queens Park Rangers. The moment that they won the title and Joey Barton tried to fist fight everybody that he could see. So
makes sense. Definitely makes sense.
On that note, So that's it. That's it for this episode of Boom Goes the Dynamite. And thanks for listening. Chris, any final words?
Not at all. We'll see you guys next week.
Yep. Take care.